Good evening. We are continuing with Chapter 14. Originally, we thought this was Chapter 6, but it turns out it is, in fact, Chapter 14, Our Relationship to God and to Each Other. And although we had made this recording before, some of you didn't hear it. So we are releasing it now as the true Chapter 14. Let us continue.
Let's get down to business here and continue with the Kailua Study Series, Chapter 6. Ye are the sons of God if, which is a strange thing because he never does go into that particular scripture, but rather describes many things that we need to be doing. And I just found myself writing the question in the margin over and over again, are we doing this? Are you doing this? So, let's get into it here. On page 85, I made note that he said, nothing of God is locked up in our humanhood. There isn't a single trace of God in any human being. God is the infinite allness embodied in the spiritual Son of God, which is that center of our being, which is our spiritual identity. And so we see that really this is a fancy way of saying there isn't a single human being. Why do I say that? Because if there's not a single trace of God, which is reality, in any human being, then there's no reality in any human being. Therefore, any human being is not real. However, there is a center to your being. And in that center is the Son of God, or God manifest individually as spiritual identity. And he says, as we let it escape from us, then does it come into visible being. And why do I feel that's important? Because if you reverse that, it reads that it comes into visible being as you let it escape. And so if it's not in visible being, if that spiritual identity, the infinite allness of God, is not beginning to manifest into visible being, then you have not found the way to let it escape from you. So it begins our little journey here in this chapter talking about Chinese art and how the art is never an expression of the artist, but rather the artist made himself a channel for that life force to flow through and manifests into beauty and harmony. And then, of course, he says he's written the whole infinite way in one sentence. And really, he has. This is all that we're trying to do. We are trying to be a transparency, an instrument. You know, we talk a lot about being a receptivity, being receptive, having the listening ear, having an attitude of receptivity. Always walking around where a part of your consciousness is actively listening. In other words, you are to become receptivity. That's what you are to become, receptivity itself. And in that receptivity does the infinite allness of God escape from you. Now, and that's what he says. The whole of our existence is not to express ourselves, but to be a fitting instrument through which its glories might appear. So then we are never trying to express ourselves. You see, another being must express itself, its mind, its presence, its glories, its love. When I wrote here a couple weeks ago, over here on my scratch pad and then transfer it to my journal. The mind of man is not equipped to know the truth. It must come from another mind. Have that mind in you which was also in Christ Jesus. So you are never trying to express yourself, your being, your mind, or your presence, or your love. You haven't got any. If you have, it's make-believe. Because remember, we're starting with the premise that there isn't a single trace of God or reality in any human being. So, therefore, it's made-believe, make-believe. No, we are not able, the human mind is not equipped to know the truth. The human mind cannot know the truth. Anything you know in your mind is not the truth. Of course, you know, we all nod in approval that we cannot contain the infinite in a finite mind. However, then we sit down to meditate and we know a lot of truth with the mind. You see, this is a mild form of insanity, don't you think? All right. Some other mind has to impart it to you. And it does. It does impart it to you when you become receptivity itself. And so on the next page, he talks about in the moment of that click, in the moment of that instant of realization, all the imprisoned perfume of that infinite allness of God begins to flow. And that click is a release. Now, let me explain that to you as I see it. And I could be wrong, but this is the way I experience it. So for me, it works. Now, we sit down to meditate, and yes, the mind steps in. The human mind steps in. Hey, I've got some memorized truth here. Let's look at this. And we are learning in this Kai Lewis study series that we're going to have to approach this from a new direction. While all that was good in the first and second degree, we are walking into the third degree of the spiritual path, and so we're going to have to learn, well, unlearn everything we had learned in the other two. And so we are learning to approach this from a new direction. And so we see the mind jump in there, and it says, I've got some memorized truth. Which one would you like me to pull out? And it sorts through and, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit. Okay, fine. So we think that thought, and nothing happens. It's a dry desert. There's nothing there, no oasis, no water. Certainly no wellspring of water of spirit. No, we're moving around on the letter, the desert of the letter. And it kills. You can't live on it. So we understand that, especially those of us in this study together. Now we understand, okay, I see what you're doing. Be quiet, be quiet. And so we are not sitting down and immediately a stream of thoughts about truth come to us. We remind ourselves, no, that's not truth. An activity of truth and consciousness is that which is received from within, from a deeper level, from another mind. Truth must come from another mind. And so we recognize, all right, I've got to receive truth from the mind which was also in Christ Jesus. I've got to be receptivity itself. And that doesn't involve a lot of thinking. That involves something called a click. And so as I started to say, my understanding of this and the way I practice this is I recognize the click. I never liked that word, click. It reminded me of a big fountain pen. I don't like click. But I do like release, and it's interchangeable. And so in the moment of that release, release from what? Come on. That's right. Release from the mind, the human mind. And so in the moment of that release from thoughts, from thinking truth, in the moment of that release, we become receptivity itself. We become the window pane, the transparency, the witness, the beholder. It is a state of awareness, of being. We become receptivity itself, and all of that imprisoned perfume, splendor, begins to flow. And so you see what meditation is? Each and every meditation must be a ascending up or out of or over that human mind. Because we've already established at the beginning, there is not even a single trace of God in that mind. Incidentally, that mind is what manufactures the entire human being. And so, your job is no longer to be a human being. Your job is to come out of that, to awaken to your being as receptivity. It's a marriage between your receptivity and God's flowing. That's what soul is, receptive. That's what spirit is, flowing. And the spirit penetrates your soul. The two are merged. And the birth of Christ, or God individualized into visible expression, takes place. And this must happen in each and every meditation. Now he's going to tell you in this chapter the things that stand in the way, the things that must happen first before you can become this receptivity. And if you hear snoring in the background, that's my little cat over here. He snores in his sleep. All right, now, he says here, it would be a mistake to look out into the world after feeling that release to see what happens. And that is the mistake that I've made, and I'm sure many of us make. We do feel that release. Something clicks. We feel something, a movement, an inner quickening. We know that spirit is on the scene. We've had the assurance. And we open our eyes and we look, how's that $100 going to come? Maybe it'll come through him or her. How come it hasn't come? Where is it? Why am I not healed yet? I felt this release. Ah, he says it's a mistake to do that. That's not our function, to watch the changing pictures. And I'll tell you why, because I know that you can receive it. Because all of the changing pictures, good or bad, are this very same human mind. Where do you think the pictures are? They're not out there. Out there is God's perfect being. Standing in the kingdom, remember? So these pictures, all these pictures, now you're looking at these pictures to change. You really look at this for a minute. You experience a release. You know that God is on the scene. God is telling you, I'm here. I will never leave you, by this feeling you get within. And then you open your eyes and begin to look in the human mind for God. He just said, there's not a single trace there. Stop looking there. Once you've had the release, you just get up and go about your business. Don't look anywhere. And then it manifests in some way you know not of. And so he says, that's not our function, to watch the changing pictures, but to abide in that inner realization and then let the new harmonies appear. Because what we are really watching is the birth of the Christ. Not just the appearance of a healthy human or a wealthy human, but the birth of the Christ as your individual being. And we just explain that. The soul and the spirit come together and there's the birth of the Christ appearing visibly. Alright, so our vision is on the unfolding of that Christ, he says. We weren't looking, or we aren't looking for a change of humanhood, but rather the dying of humanhood and the rebirth of the Christ. You see that? Now, Now he's going to get into the things that might stand in the way of that. And he's very specific. And so we're going to have to ask ourselves some tough questions. Me too, I guarantee you. All right. He starts off by saying, and I hope you don't take this in any ego sense, because I'm not saying it that way. I'm saying it to demonstrate this. He says, the love has to flow out from us, not to us. All right? So we have to be an instrument. He's starting to open our awareness to this principle that our whole focus has been on changing this outer picture and maybe drawing some good to us, even using spiritual principles to do it. Well, I'm going to demonstrate perfect health. I'm going to demonstrate an increased income of supply. I'm going to demonstrate a companion. You know, all that in the first degree. And then in the second degree, it became a little more subtle. Well, I'm going to practice these principles to see the earth dissolve and goodness appear. I'm going to practice these principles so that I can impersonalize and nothingize evil and good can take its place. Well, now he's trying to move our attention from there to realizing that we have nothing to do with those pictures anymore. We are to be a transparency through which the infinite allness of God can flow. And so in regards to love, we have to be an instrument for God's love, not your love. You don't have any. For God's love to flow out from us, not to us. Now, when I first realized this, I realized I wasn't doing this to the degree that I maybe ought to. And that was about 3 years ago. And so I searched around within my being about how I may better practice this principle. And that's why I started making these talks online. There are now over 200 talks have been made. And I've given all of them away, not asking for a penny. I made these talks to practice this principle that I might be a transparency through which this spirit might reveal itself. And that's all, really. And so each of us in our own ways must also come to the same place. And that's what he's going to tell us here. All right. So must our supply, whether it's economic supply or health supply, happiness supply, anything, must flow out from the center of our being because we are at the center of our being as infinite as God. Now, all right. How are you going to... Well, we walk around saying that our true identity is Christ, and then we live as a human being. Now, that won't fit. That won't fit together. We're going to have to live as Christ. I live, yet not I. Christ liveth in me. That's going to have to become visibly demonstrated. And we can only do that by deciding once and for all, we're going to have to find a way to pour out. And so he begins us with the idea of tithing, the principle of tithing. He says, it's a tremendous blessing when it is pure, when it is giving. It makes no difference whether it's 10%, 5%, 20%. When it is a free will giving without a single trace of thought of return, when it is pure gratitude, then tithing... Well, he says, no one who ever tithes can ever lack. And I made a note in the error here, I mean, in the margin here, that it must come from gratitude with no thought of a return. I really like what he had to say about this. And I made a note here somewhere. I can't find it right now. We'll get to it later, but I'll tell it to you right now. Oh, here it is. Tithing has to do with the past, not with the future. Only then is tithing a blessing. So, tithing is not, well, I'll give 10% and the universe will give it back to me and I'll keep score too. No. Tithing is you feel grateful for something you have received, a spiritual blessing from someone, or an opportunity from someone, or just love from someone, and you feel grateful for it because of what they did. And so you tithe, you give to them, but not really to them. You give to just express that gratitude, thank you, to the source. You send it to them, but it's really for the source that came through them. You understand? Here's a good example. But I don't want you to tell anybody this. Now, this is just between us. When I first read the Hawaiian Hotel Talks, that really wonderful 3-book trilogy of consciousness unfolding and consciousness transform, I forget what they are, but the last one is really thick and I love it to death. And it's the Hawaii Hotel Talks of 63, 64, I think it was. You can find it on Acropolis. It had just come out, and I loved it so much, I thought, wow, this is great. And I tracked down the publisher, I talked to him on the phone, and I sent him a donation. And it was a good one, a good donation, because I believed in this. I just wanted to express my gratitude and hopefully see it continue. And out of that formed a friendship with an editor that I still have to this day, and we love each other. But my point is that you have to live this. You can't just talk it. This principle of tithing, I know it's right. I know it. And I live it. But I don't talk about it all the time because then people think I'm trying to ask them for money, and I'm not. I have made a couple of talks on spiritual supply now, and both of them brought this up. And I'm real hesitant on it because then people think that I'm always hinting for money like the evangelists on TV. And I'm not. I'm explaining the principle. If you feel grateful and you send me something, fine. I mean, that's wonderful. I'm grateful too. And if you don't, fine, don't. But I have to mention this, otherwise I'm not telling you everything. And so tithing does work. And by that I mean, how does he put it over here? No one who ever tithes can ever lack. If you're lacking, you better take a look at whether or not you're practicing this. Okay, upward and onward. Here we go. When we pour out from the center of our being, not for a return, but with the idea that since we're infinite, we have plenty of it to spare, whether service or dollars or consideration or forgiveness, as long as it flows out without any sense of return. And I put this question to you and to myself, are we doing this? Then if not, we lack because we are demonstrating perfect lack. Yes, that's what I wanted to bring up. If you're experiencing lack and you're not tithing because you don't have enough, then you are demonstrating perfectly what you're believing. I don't have enough. Therefore, I lack. And now I lack visibly because I'm practicing that principle perfectly. You see? However, if I am giving and pouring out service and love and blessings and money and charity and, well, whatever form it takes. Oh, and prayers too. You can tithe prayers, you know. All right, so let's say you look in your bank account and you don't have $50 to send somewhere or to donate somewhere. Who says you can't set aside a half an hour or an hour to pray for someone? Who says you can't do that? That's pouring out, isn't it? If you're knowing the truth or someone's struggling with something, they don't have to ask you for help. You can sit down and practice these principles by praying without letting anyone know what you're doing. Or praying for forgiveness for those that maybe don't look like they deserve it. You see, there's a lot of ways to pour out, and if you pour out the intangible ways, who says it can't come back to you in the form of dollars? It can. The universe will give back to you the bread you cast out, but not necessarily in the same form, definitely not through the same person. Sometimes, but not always. Now, he says, let us take the next shocking step. This is the truth about prayer. Any prayer that has within itself a single trace of a desire to receive from God, to get or to achieve, is not prayer. It's a sin. No prayer must have in it any element of desire for good to be received. Now seriously, really, have you not sat down and prayed in hopes that you might receive a healing or receive something rather? Now he's telling you the only way you can approach prayer, like we started in this chapter, prayer now has to be for you that you become a state of receptivity, a transparency for the invisible kingdom to flow. It's not getting good, he says, it's letting good. That's the object of prayer, that we may open ourselves to let the good flow from within our being. You see, he's trying to teach you to live as Christ. Come out of the grave of humanhood. That means you're going to have to change a lot of things. Alright, so God flows out, I said, as love, service, vision, money, gratitude, realization, or presence. Those are all the ways that you can pour out. So, when prayer is understood as an opportunity to let flow, then prayer approaches its higher element. And now he's going to move into true prayer, which is communion with God. And that's going to have some conditions on it, which we're going to discuss. I better talk a little faster. All right. He talks about being still. And that leads to communion, which leads to the culmination of prayer, which is oneness or realization. And when in that oneness, there's no longer a communion, because there are not two, there is only one. Now, I bracketed this paragraph here, and I wrote study. Because you need to study this. I need to study this. We need to study this. In that oneness, there's no longer a communion, because there are not two, there is only one. And that one is God expressing itself, revealing itself, fulfilling itself. And in that period, there is the height of spiritual experience. Up to that point, there is the highest known joy of the human world, which is communion. When a human being, an individual, can commune with God, can so rise above humanhood as to desire nothing of God, want nothing or seek nothing, except communion, then prayer is achieved. And so I wrote, this is how you pray. This paragraph will tell you how to pray. Now, prayer, he says, is like tithing. There should be not one iota of thought about gaining something. Prayer should be, how do I become that receptivity that the infinite allness may express itself? See, we were looking at this in the wrong way. Now, finally, at the bottom of this page, 89, he's going to get into the conditions. There are conditions on praying. There are conditions before you can do this. And if you haven't met the conditions, that might tell you why your prayers aren't working. And that's the essence of this chapter. So let's get into it. He says, the real living, moving, and having one's being in continuous God consciousness cannot come until a certain measure of life has been achieved in living one's relationship with other people. Now that sounds an awful lot like first be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer thy gifts, doesn't it? And it is. So how do we live in relationship to other people in our inner life? Here is our basis for living, he's going to tell you. And this mode of living, this relationship with your brothers and sisters, with other people, doing it this way, living it this way, will lead ultimately to communion with God itself. And he begins this right off with, to us it is as if there are no other people. And so there you have it. That's all you have to do. Live as if there are no other people. No biggie, huh? Alright. I must learn to live without regard to anybody on the human plane. I can't look to them for my good. I look to no one on the outer plane, he says. Looking to no one for anything, not even for gratitude, not even for remuneration, not even for recognition or reward. There's a secret place in here where I achieve a feeling of oneness with God, and I feel, Father, if I'm to have it, it's your will and your way. Thy will be done in me as it is everywhere else on earth. In other words, I wrote, when we give up the need or desire for other people and what they can give us, then we can commune with God itself. First, the letting go. Then, answered prayer. Are we doing this? How do you know if you're doing that? Are you living the right relationship with other people that he describes in these couple of pages? The answer is simple. Are you experiencing answered prayer or communion? It's really as simple as the hand in front of us or the nose on our face. You don't have to ask anyone. Are you experiencing this communion, this release? Are you experiencing being a state of receptivity in which the infinite allness has begun to express itself? If the answer is no, then it is because you haven't understood this, so you need to study this. You don't need to go on until you have this. All right? What I mean by that is, don't look for where your mistake might be somewhere else. It's right here. All right. Now, all right, at the bottom of 91, how then does that affect me when those out here may do evil unto me or despitefully use me? Now watch that, because here hinges a very big, big point in your demonstration. All right, he has explained in the previous two pages that we are not to look to anybody for anything. Remember, my kingdom is not of this world, those of us in this study series. It's no longer of this world out here. We have to really practice that and live that, not just think about that in our minds or 20 minutes in the morning and night during our meditation. We have to step into a new identity, and we have to live it. And so we have to consciously remember we are not looking to anyone for anything at all. Of course, we'll forget maybe more than we remember, but we still practice, and we stop ourselves, and we correct ourselves silently. No, I look only to the Father. Father, thy will be done. But now, what do we do about, that's eliminating the looking to other people for good, realizing there's no good in them for us. But now, what do we do about the evil? Because these are two sides to the same coin. This is freeing ourselves, really, if you must know, from the belief in good and evil, from this world. But it has to be lived day by day. That's how we get free. It's not in one grand gesture. It's not in a instantaneous awakening. So what do we do about this evil that we see in people? Because it's not there either. Well, he tells us, our attitude toward those in the world who do evilly unto us is ignoring it. Now watch this cosmic law, he says. We have been given the grace of the cosmic law revealing oneself. And I wrote, are we doing this? Again, ask yourself, are we doing this? Are our prayers answered, resulting in communion? If not, then we haven't been doing this. We haven't been ignoring the people that appear to be doing evil. And it says this is a big, big point in your demonstration. So you won't have communion. You see, when it's said to us, we must first be reconciled with our brother and then come and offer our gifts and prayer, which is, Father, let me be a receptivity. That's your gift. If we haven't taken these two steps, one, not to look to the good, not to look to them for good, and two, ignoring anything that looks like evil, if we haven't done that, we're not going to be able to commune. We haven't been reconciled to our brother. And so that's what he's telling us here. Before communion, which results in answered prayer, which results in being a receptivity and witnessing the infinite wholeness of God manifesting, before that can happen, this has to happen. And so you have no one to ask but yourself, am I doing this? Are we doing this? Now on the next page, those that do not do likewise are no concern of mine. What does that mean? That means we are to no longer participate in gossip, political rumors, discussing evil men in high places. None of that is allowed now. You've given that up. Oh, you can keep it. You can have it. You can participate. You can feel a little bit better than the people you're putting down. However, there's only one thing you lose. You lose God. You lose the spiritual awakening. You lose communion. You lose receptivity. You lose realization of oneness. You lose being a witness to God manifesting itself. Now, here are the areas that you must look at if you're not experiencing answered prayer. It's one of these things. You haven't been reconciled to your brother. You haven't learned not to look to your brother for good or your sister for good, and you haven't learned to look through and ignore the evil. In short, you're still under the belief in two powers, in good and evil. Alright, now, none can do good or evil to us since our demonstration is purely God in action. What that means is people can add to your life as God flows through them, but nobody can take away from you anymore. You're free. Alright. Never fear or hate those who are against the divine law, the cosmic law of the one self. Sure, because if you fear or you hate them, you're going to demonstrate perfectly, aren't you? You're going to demonstrate a separate sense of self. And sometimes that self may appear to be good to you, but other times it's going to appear to be evil. You can't have one without the other. All right. Our lives, you might say, are insulated from the world. We're in the world, but we are not of it. We are insulated. All of the good comes from the Father within me. It comes through every individual on the face of the globe who is receptive and responsive to God. God appears infinitely as people. However, if we haven't loosed it into the world, It cannot return to us because those who are carrying good are busy carrying it to those who have loosed it. Now that's a very important principle. Study this, ponder this. I wrote over here, in short, we have now only one relationship, the relationship with God as all. But this principle, I want you to catch this principle. As you become a state of receptivity, you become a walking receptivity to something out here? No, to within, to the infinite allness within. And that flows through you, and you know it because you feel it as an assurance, as a presence, as a release. You feel the quickening, the movement. That means you've loosed it out into the world. And then is the only time it can return unto you through all those who are receptive. If you haven't loosed it out into the world, you can't have any of it. You first have to let loose of the bread before it can return as cake, he says. But we can't do that until we've reconciled with the belief in good and evil with our brother. That has to come first. Loving your neighbor as yourself comes before loving God, doesn't it? So, he says, we make our contact with the Father, live in it seriously, as though we expected no good from any individual on the face of the globe, and yet we let God's good flow through us. Now, this is hard to learn, especially when we have problems. We need health, we need supply, we need companions. It's hard. How do you live out from the center of your being as the infinite allness of God when you're experiencing yourself as this limited person? But he freely admits that. It's not easy. Simple, just not easy. But you have said you want to follow the infinite way. So one of the principles is you're going to have to learn prayer is letting the infinite allness flow out. Tithing is pouring out. Loving is pouring. Supply, you demonstrate you have by what you give. Because if you have it, you can give it. Okay, so this is how Christ lives, and he tells us that. Christ's whole activity is that of sharing, giving, pouring. And now he says at the bottom, our conscious oneness with God constitutes our oneness with all spiritual being and idea. And in case you haven't considered this, that also includes those on the invisible planes of existence. Your conscious oneness with God constitutes your oneness with all those on the invisible planes of existence. And when you know that, you can commune with some of those. Now, again, he repeats, there's no way to watch what's going to happen out here. So you need to stop that. It's enough that you had the release. Now go about your business. Get busy pouring and don't look. I guarantee you, when you look again, a day or two or three, you'll see this infinite allness in visible manifestation. And I wrote down here, be surprised. Let God surprise you. All right, now. When you realize that God is pouring out, then every individual comes bearing gifts. Why? Because every individual is an instrument for the flowing of God. But if we look to that individual, it's cut off. Just like that. It's cut off. So if it's cut off, do you berate yourself? No, you say to yourself, well, you dummy. I guess maybe that is berating, but that's the way I talk to myself. You dummy, of course it's cut off. You went back to looking to them, or it, or her, or him. Well, you better reverse it again. Supply is pouring, it's tithing, it's loving, it's giving, it's sharing. Now, reverse it, quick, before you starve. All right. Enough of that. Now, cosmic law is a wonderful subject, but it's also a terrible subject. Yes, because what you sow, you reap. And so you know if you've been sowing good and evil, you just set yourself up, didn't you? However, always remember this, and it's a scripture in the Bible, I forget where, Kings or something. Love is the fulfillment of the law. If the only thing you pour out is love, what are you going to be surrounded and dwelling in? Nothing but love. Do you want to live in a universe that is completely governed by love? Well, what are you waiting for? Start pouring. It's you that creates it. All right. At the bottom here, on 94, I wrote, there's no way to have the correct relationship with God and receive answered prayer or demonstration until we have this correct relationship to people first. Only then can communion come to you. And that's the point of this chapter. Really, this whole chapter should have been called First Be Reconciled to Your Brother, Then Come and Offer Thy Gifts. Alright. And put that another way, there is no way to experience grace, my brothers and sisters, until cosmic law has been set right first. When the law is still, and there's no sowing, then grace happens. Now here's how I can explain that. Years and years and years ago, over 35, I had a dream, and I went and I took it to to the man that gave me the first book, The Art of Meditation, to Don. And I said, Don, let me tell you about this dream I had. I had a dream I was in a playground, and there was a swing. And I was climbing up the chain. No, not a swing, a pendulum. I said there was a pendulum. And I was climbing up the stem of the pendulum. And I got all the way to the top. And the pendulum started slowing down and slowing down. And then I woke up. I said, now what does that dream mean? And it's this principle right here which we have just stated. Now listen to me. You are ready and open and receptive and can receive grace only when the law is stopped. You either live by the law or you live by grace. And everyone in this study is at the point in their incarnation where they are not sowing, or if they are, it's very little. And that dream was showing me I had come up, or I needed to come up over the swinging pendulum of the law of sowing and reaping. When that pendulum slows down and becomes still, grace happens. And so really, that's what Joel is telling us here, or the Spirit through Joel is telling us. Yeah, that's accurate. The Spirit here is telling us, your Spirit is telling you, first be reconciled with your brother. Step out of this belief in good and evil by living this way. By not looking to them for good, looking only within to God. By not seeing evil, but impersonalizing it, nothingizing it. In this way, the pendulum is slowed and slowed and slowed and becomes still. Then you are that state of receptivity, and grace starts living itself. You are grace, invisible manifestation. Isn't that wonderful? Now, he says, there are certain laws into which we must come. And as we come into the oneness with these laws, they fulfill themselves in us. And that's what I just described. Now, one of the biggest things, he says, is to learn the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, must flow out from you. How else are you going to demonstrate something? Seriously, how do you demonstrate that you're a parent? By being a mother or a father. How do you demonstrate you have supply? By pouring out to prove that you have it. You have it and you can give it. That's how you prove you have it. How do you demonstrate the kingdom of heaven? By learning to let it flow out from you. The actual kingdom itself must flow out from you. Are we doing this? Are you? All right. God's work cannot have anything to do with time or space. Now that was such a wowzer that I just put meditate on this because I can feel it. You know, sometimes I can read a line that he spoke or wrote and it's just so pregnant. I can feel it. It almost stretches back to infinity. And God's work cannot have anything at all to do with time or space. It is just absolutely pregnant. So I'm suggesting you meditate on that. It's going to take, well, let me put it this way. In that one sentence is years of revelations. God's work was done, completed, as your individual being. That's another one. So, we merely go into God for the sake of communion. Then that good, which is in the relationship of communion, begins to flow. In one's relationship with God, there are certain forms of good that are inherent, and that unfold and flow just through relationship, nothing else. Living in this conscious union with God, that's wonderful. That reminds us that we're not going there to demonstrate anything. The realization that came to me while I was on the road was the demonstration must be made by the presence. Aha! Now see, I've been thinking that it was up to me, and you probably thought it was up to you to practice these principles in our meditation and make a demonstration. No. Nope. There's only one demonstration to make, and that must be made by the presence. And what is that demonstration? The presence itself. This must be your way of life now. Listen. A constant seeking within for greater opportunities to let flow, to express, to share. Now that must be your new way of life. And I expect to see that happening through you, all of you. Now gratitude has to do with the sharing or expressing of a joy that had to do with yesterday. Wonderful. That's how you know if it's really tithing. You're not doing it for a return. You're just saying, wow, that's beautiful. Thank you. Alright, now, this is beautiful. I like this line here. The mesmerism of the world has taught us to give in order that we may receive. Yikes. Always thought that was a principle, didn't you? Here it turns out it's mesmerism. Give that you may be, that you may receive. Oh, wow. No, give that you may demonstrate what and who you are, period. Or, as he says, give because you have received. All right, now, let's see. Forgiveness, understanding, consideration, kindness, generosity, love, peace, harmony. Yes, these are all ways that you can pour out. Then comes the transformation in consciousness, which reveals one's Christhood. And I wrote, only by living this are we transformed. See, be transformed by living this. And so are you doing this? How do you know if you're doing this? Well, are your prayers answered? Are you experiencing this inner communion? Come on, get honest. If you're not, you're not doing this. This must be done first. You must stand on this and as this. Then will be answered prayer or communion come. And let's see, 97. Christhood is a servant, not a master. And that's how you know. Are you serving in some capacity? Most of us in this class are, and I'm aware of it. If you are, then you are approaching Christhood. Now, when we individually have that understanding of our true being, that in understanding our union with God, our oneness with God, we have the infinity of God, that breaks off all contact with this outside world, in the sense of desiring, wanting, seeking, getting, and achieving. You see, you're going to be living again. You're not supposed to anymore be living in this outside world. Oh yes, you're walking around here, but you must be a state of receptivity, living in that inner kingdom at all times. That is the state of Christhood in which God is the meat that I have, that the world knows not of. And he asks again, are we to be that peculiar people? He really wanted to have a circle of Christhood, a band of Christhood around this earth, peculiar people living by these principles. As he says, those who are to be a light unto the rest of the world. He wanted to start with this group in his living room, and I don't know how successful he was, because I didn't meet them. But if it were some of the people that we suspect were there, then he was successful. And it was Spirit raising them up. And so now, are we another group that Spirit is raising up? Is there going to be 10 teachers in the next 10 years suddenly appear on the scene? I do not know. But I know this, if Christ is pouring through, when Christ pours through, something wonderful and blessed and beautiful will appear. That I know. So we change from being getters to being sharers of the Father's light. It becomes necessary to watch, however, because sometimes the ego comes and says, oh, I am doing this. I'm sharing this. I guess now I'm on the right track. That's very, very dangerous. At no time are we anything but instruments. Never, never. You better put a little asterisk there. Because the ego does it. Oh, aren't I something? I've made 200 talks. Yeah. And then on the 201st, you sit down with that attitude and see what comes. Nothing. Or it's so dry, it's terrible. I've had that experience in the middle of them. I had to delete 2 talks. Go back to the drawing board and say, oops. I'm sorry. It wasn't me. Would you please talk again? I'm listening. Yeah. All right. Let's see. I am but the instrument of the Father's appearing. Remember that. The instrument of the Father's appearing. I just think that's a beautiful way of putting that. Okay, so you're the window pane, not the light that's shining through it. Alright, now here he says, what do you do about the evil at places, which I have heard him state elsewhere he had a problem with. He says, you have to come to the place where you realize, well, if that's what you need as a lesson for now, you'll have to take that as a lesson until you awaken. You see, you have to reach the place where you're not going to fight anybody or anything, because if you attach evil to them, you've just undone this whole thing. Now you have a world with good and evil in it again. So you see the evil, you see the dictator murdering people, but instead of having sympathy for these people that appear to be murdered, and instead of having hatred or resentment or condemnation to the dictator, you've got to be reconciled to all that, or when you sit down in meditation, you're going to get nothing and absolutely no answered prayer, no communion, no release, you won't be receptive to anything except these swirling thoughts, the human mind. So the way to get free, he says, is to look at the victims and say, well, if that's what you need because you believe in good and evil right now, well, then that's what you'll have to have until you awaken. And then you need to look at the dictator and say, no, this is not you. This is the same world mind operating through you. It's playing both roles. Do you know that? The fabric is the same. The victim and the dictator. It's playing both roles. You're looking at the same guy. And it's world mind. Alright. So he says, even then, the desire to save the world must disappear. You've got to have that. That's got to go. You can't have the desire to save the world. Save it from what? If you see something that needs to be saved from, you're hypnotized. So even that must go. And eventually reach the place where you realize, if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. Oh, he says, these are such important points that we have covered today. And the grace of God has been good to us. Yes, they are important. But I think he named the title wrong. It should be, first be reconciled to thy brother, then come and offer thy gifts of prayer. Now, the greatest blessing we can be to anyone, anywhere, at any time, is to seek these few moments of separation from the world so that this contact may be made and that aroma or perfume may be permitted to escape. At first, the sense is that we aren't doing anything. Eventually, you'll see in that we do nothing, we are doing more than others, because actually it is an invisible presence and power which can't be seen. But it is at work. It's completely an invisible thing. Yet in just having that momentary sense of release, we have made room for the whole presence and power of the infinite allness of God to flow out from us. All right, and this is important down here because it's the difference between the mind saying it and the mind, Christ's mind saying it. And that's the difference between experiencing more of these mental images, which are not answered prayer, and the actual answered prayer by Christ. So he says, the moment that this I says itself, not we declare it, the moment it says itself within us, I am with thee, I am on the scene, I will never leave thee. The moment we hear it, and that's circled and underlined, starred and highlighted, we hear it, we sense it, or become aware of it. That is it announcing itself. Call it the Annunciation. That is the announcing of the very activity, presence, and power of God. Right there is what release means. That's the click. Right there. But watch out that it's not being said by you. Do not say I with the mind. No, don't sit down and have these thoughts come to you. That's not an activity of truth and consciousness. We established that last week or the week before. No, the activity of truth and consciousness is when you hear it, sense it, feel it. It's imparted to you from Christ, from another mind. The human mind is incapable of knowing the truth. It must be imparted from another mind. Have that mind in you which was also in Christ Jesus. Now, therein lies the whole secret. Really, that's it. Now, it doesn't have to be an audible hearing. It makes no difference, he says. But it's still the voice. How do you know? Come on. It's visibly manifest. When you hear or sense or feel that presence, that voice utters itself. It appears as harmony out here. And so, that constitutes the spiritual messenger, the spiritual presence, and the spiritual power. And I float. And nothing else is answered prayer. There is no other outer demonstration Are we experiencing this? Are our prayers answered? So when I started with this chapter and first took a look at it, I felt like, well, there's not much here. But upon reflection, meditation, and going over it again, I see that this is vital. This is not just thrown in here to fill up space. First, before you come to the altar within to pray, to receive the sacred silent communion, oneness with your Father, first be reconciled to your brother and sister by practicing the principles which will free you from looking to them for good or looking to them and seeing evil. Having come out of the belief in good and evil out there, having turned your attention only within, you can now be receptivity itself, and you can hear, sense, and feel the quickening spirit as it moves into, penetrates your soul, and there deposits the Christ, which is born out of you into visible expression as the harmony of being. Amen.